Hello and welcome, everybody, back to the Research VR podcast. I am your host, Oz Balabanian, and with me today is Peter Luckoff. Hey, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Hello.
Welcome back, everyone. Today, it's going to be an intimate two-man show, actually. We didn't manage to have a guest for today because we're technically not recording this at a usual time. Monday morning, actually, on September 25th. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm doing surprisingly well, even though the weather is very rainy. And you?
Not bad. California is beautiful as always. And we're sitting inside with headsets on because, you know, and so the weather matters way less to us now.
That's absolutely true.
Today, we want to go through a few bits of news that I think the listeners of the podcast will find very interesting, including the 8K Pimax headset that everyone keeps hearing about. This crazy new thing that has been taking over the subreddits and Twitter and the YouTube channels about VR. We want to go through, talk a little bit about iOS 11 being out and a few AR kit apps that are out in the wild and some interesting things that they've been doing there. And as a follow-up to our previous episodes, we do want to talk a little bit about the hackathon that you're participating in and how you use ARKit in that, right, Peter? And as well as your bachelor's thesis that you just finished, actually. You guys just submitted the paper, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. And a few bits of news house cleaning. We'll do that at the end. We'll talk about Oculus Connect and potentially a meetup that we might have with
And also about what you have been doing recently.
Yeah, we'll clean up the house and we'll talk about that. All right, let's jump into it. The Pimax 8K headset coming in. Well, they call it an 8K headset, saying, you know, it's 4K per eye.
But they have not only the 8K, they have also the 5K version on the Kickstarter project. Mm-hmm. So they basically, you know them from those standalone headsets that have been selling apparently quite well in China. And now they are releasing the 5K, the 8K version, and both are kind of modular. So they support the Vive tracking, they support their own tracking, you can put a Leap Motion on them, and they promise a lot of things.
Is it a Leap Motion?
They showed a Leap Motion in the video that you can mount it. They promised a lot of things that would make anyone like right clicks and buy it.
That's right.
They promised everything you would ever want.
It is a very juicy, juicy product, and I think a lot of people have been really interested. Well, a lot of people have been wanting to get higher resolution headsets to watch movies and read text. They also are claiming 200 degrees of field of view. There's been a few videos on YouTube this week, notably from Tested, actually. They had a interview with the Pimax guys, and they were talking a lot about the specs. They're talking a lot about how they're achieving 200 degrees. But the best piece of like technical literature that you can read is coming from Dr. Oliver Kralos, actually, from UC Davis. He's a longtime VR researcher. He's a pretty big authority on this entire subject of just like hardware and how to measure even degrees per pixels per degree and basically everything that you'd want to know as a hardware nerd. This guy is on his game. Follow him on Twitter, actually. It's okraylos, and on he's very active on Reddit as well as okdoc. So on his blog, which he's been writing for doc.ok.org. So it's titled Projections and Distortion in Wide FOV HMDs. And he's talking a little bit about like how the hell they're actually achieving this 200 degrees of field of view, notably by stretching the right side of the image by by X amount. And it's a non-linear stretch. It looks like it's stretching. It stretches out as you go more to the periphery.
Exponentially, right?
Which raises some concerns in terms of, like, if I see something in my periphery with that headset, is it actually going to be in that spatial location when I look at it? You know, is it going to switch in position? And I think the conclusion was yes. And the other conclusion, which I read on Reddit, and that's coming from Everyday VR, another VR person. She does a lot of YouTube videos. Where are my comments? She was talking about that actually it's really, really bad to render each eye with one, let's say, virtual camera, because you're just wasting renders.
renders.
By
the unit called renders.
Yes, unit of render. You're losing a lot of render power by rendering like 140 degrees per eye. And she was suggesting that you should probably have at least two. But this is something that SteamVR can't support just yet. Like, they can only
exactly.
SteamVR is built for Rift and Vive and maybe OSVR or whatever. But
so technically, as far as we heard in the previous podcast with Dominic Escoffier from NVIDIA, there is a way how they do different level of detail rendering on the GPU level. Mm. But that's something that this NVIDIA Works framework takes care of it. So it's kind of between basically Steam and your GPU. So Steam okay. doesn't even know it happens. So they save performance, but I'm not sure how much the Primax 8K, 5K headsets will actually support this rendering technology. If they just rely on Steam, then it's just a waste of rendering units.
Right. And I mean, it's going to be no easy feat to actually, you know, render anything for an 8K headset with 200 degrees of field of view. I believe it actually requires two DisplayPort connections into your GPU, like DisplayPort 1.4, exactly. I think.
Yes, and remember the episode we had with the VR engineers about the 8K headset they built?
That's right.
They were basically complaining that when you have two HDMI...
Wait, let me stop you. It was a 5K headset, not an 8K.
Oh yeah, it was 5K, true. But even with 5K, they had problems with interferences between two cables. So the panels were not tough to build. You just buy them, you put them in.
Right.
But getting sure that the screens don't resonate with each other and all those small issues that they described there, apparently they seem to solve if their headset works. So it's kind of very promising.
I hope so.
In theory.
And they're saying they got rid of the LCD smearing that you get, you know, because the 8K, they're not OLED panels. These are LCDs. Somehow they have low persistent panels that they've built. I don't know. That's just what they said in the tested video. Like, I think our recommendation is wait and see how the hell these things are. But
and I'm really, really, really understand everyone who is sitting there and, you know, has maybe, you know, the $800 too much and they just want to support this awesome project on Kickstarter. And I was close myself because with one thing that I really would like to solve with VR and the pixel density. So I'm really already in love with the quality of the environments, of the games. It's great. Tracking works fine. Everything is fine except the pixels. And yes, getting more GPU juice out of your computer is expensive to render this enormous amount of pixels. But just so much tempting, you know, to finally lay down on your bed, watch a nice YouTube video, or basically finally be able to read text in big screen without my eyes hurting, which would be awesome. And big screen renders the text still in a magical way and really more readable than other applications. But I just don't trust them as a whole. Like, they have a headset, and I tried it, this standalone headset, and it kind of works. Yeah, it's fine. I'm not sure if I would buy it myself, but it works, so it's technically doable. Now they have the 5K and the 8K version, and they promise everything I ever wanted in the video. I think they also somewhere, and maybe I just misread it, also said that they have eye tracking in and you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, I really want to have it. Just last time and last time and last time there was such a project and I put my money on, I basically got everything that they promised, but less than they promised.
So like, what was that project that you backed?
So one of them was definitely the, oh God, no, I forgot the name, this Vive controller simulator.
What was it trying to do?
It's basically making your phone being an HTC Vive. I will have the name in a second.
Okay, well, let's keep moving.
But there was another project. I can do multitasking. Fove VR. I have their headset, and it's good, but it's just not as much as they kind of overpromised in the marketing videos. And that goes on and on and on. Like, even with... How was the name of this controller? Mio, the Mio.
Oh, the Mio. It's an armband, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, technically, it worked.
They shipped. They totally shipped.
They all shipped, and it's great. But it's just...
It's nowhere near as precise as you'd want it to
be. Yeah, and I stopped buying stuff just for developing, right? I mean...
Yeah, you can spend an entire... You can spend like an entire salary on just buying developer-based products on Kickstarter that don't end up getting anywhere.
Exactly. And I mean, if you're really... there was another project that I got. It was this chair, the VR Go chair. I finally got it after 2 years. And it's really awesome. I just don't need it anymore because, you know, the head controlling and also the trackers from Vive got so good that I don't need it anymore. It's neat. It looks good, but I don't know. And the same might happen here. Maybe they will have a delay of 2 years. Who knows? Maybe I won't have a nice GPU.
I think you need to be a little bit more selective with the things that you're backing on Kickstarter.
I was very excited, and I'm still very excited about VR. So I was just basically baking everything.
that's how these companies make money. I, for the record, have actually never backed anything on Kickstarter. Yeah,
no,
I swear, I've never backed a single thing on Kickstarter. Not for any particular reason, but just because every time I'm going to, I like read the comments and I don't know. There's no real good positive comments for a lot of Kickstarters. There's been a few that I think have been like good companies that have started there, like notably Pebble. I'd say maybe the other ones like Avagant with the headsets as well. Like they all ship and they actually ship what they meant to, and like they didn't change the design from the initial renders. So there's a few few things out there that actually have delivered. Oh. Also,
Nolo. Yeah, okay, so Oculus. I actually have here the list of my projects from Kickstarter. The one that was definitely recently and very fast delivered was a Nolo VR motion tracking.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of makes your phone you can develop with it very fast applications that have tracking, very much HTC style in mobile, and you also can play your HTC Vive games on your headset. That is a Daydream or a Gear VR,
mm-hmm.
in theory. In practice, it means that I need to read the Chinese manual that they have, because the hardware is great, they shipped it and it's cheap, but the SDK is very, very raw. And I have a feeling that this is something that kills all the projects. So I have the VR Go chair, the Superbook, the Bestlet, Nolo, Catwalk, I put $1 in because I didn't believe them. Guest, I put $5.
You really have a funny way of going against ideas that you don't like by putting money into them.
Well, I wanted to read the news. I don't know. They built it. But in the end, and this is something that I kind of have a feeling that the guys and the girls behind the PK Maxx will, you know, have an issue with. It's not just hardware you're building. You need to make sure there is an ecosystem. And, you know, every startup those days speaks about ecosystem. I'm not meaning the word ecosystem or not a store. What I mean is the whole development.
It's a
development environment. Development environment.
Exactly. You need developers, you need content. And, like, honestly, like, I wouldn't want to back anything like Nolo, because looking at it, it's, yes, like, they're trying to bring, like, Vive, Steam VR things to a Gear VR by adding STEM-like tracking, but, like, yeah.
It's not STEM. No. It's not STEM. It works with a base station.
The base station's magnetic, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's the same. It's optical and ultrasound. That's why they use one. So the controllers have actually the same buttons as the HTC controllers, and the base station looks and sounds like an HTC Vive base station.
Like it.
Yeah, it makes like also... Yeah. So, I mean, it was $100 and I played around with it and it shows the possibility. And I also think that the product that the company I'm working for could strongly benefit from such a mobile quick solution, because we don't have render intense things. So just porting in one weekend when I have next time, you know, basically our whole Unity project to the Nolo sounds fun to me. So I basically didn't expect anything from them and I didn't got anything from them except the hardware. But the 8K headset is something that I want as a consumer. As
I think
a developer, I can develop with the DK1. I don't care. But I want 8K as a consumer. And when I will get disappointed as a consumer, I'm really terribly mad. Whether as a developer, I kind of expect companies to be, you know, not particularly good in anything anyway, because everything fails all the time. It makes sense.
And rant from Peter on Kickstarters. We'll just
spend this money.
We'll just put this out there. Buyer beware, you know, like
yeah.
Approach these with as much skepticism that you would with any other device out there. There's interesting literature you can read in terms of like how it works and how it could work, and the changes that need to be made in the infrastructure of Steam VR particularly. But it's interesting. I think rather than trying to create your own ecosystem, just piggyback off of Steam VR, I think that's like a really good solution, because you still have access to an entire catalog of games and you already have players. So anyway, we've stretched out the, no pun intended, we've stretched out this topic long enough.
Last small plug, last episode that we were doing with horseshoes, grenades, and
Hot dogs, horseshoes, okay. and grenades, yes.
Yeah.
Anton.
At some point, he was mentioning the Nolo, because the Nolo kind of mimics very nicely the controllers, but it doesn't add the velocity when you throw things. So he was actually even ranting himself that, you know, people buy all kind of equipment, and then they are mad that it doesn't support it.
That's right.
So, you know, take it with a grain of salt, everything.
That's right. Especially hardware. Like, VR is just so hardware-based, and, like, just adding these little add-ons, it's like, you're adding so much weeks and months of work for developers to even want to consider, you know, adding support. It's just like,
That's why we switched to augmented reality topic for now.
Well, yeah. moving on to mobile AR, really cool things have been happening this week.
Yes.
I want to throw a shout-out, actually, to... Brad Dwyer, Dwyer. That's how you say Dwyer, right? Dwyer. He built a really cool app that solves Sudoku puzzles, actually. It's called Magic Sudoku. You just basically point your phone to a Sudoku grid, and it just instantly fills it in. And then it tracks it, and then you can walk around the room and come back to your Sudoku squares, and they're all still filled in. It's really neat. It's like, I don't know. These are the type of AR apps that, like, I think we weren't expecting or predicting from earlier on. And I'm glad that there's access to millions of developers that are iOS developers and, you know, Android developers that didn't think about AR and VR until like a few months ago. And now they're coming at this from a completely different angle. And they're approaching problems that, like, we didn't even think VR and AR would be cool for.
Yes.
I wouldn't say this is solving like a huge problem, but I think it's
neat. But it's very unique in one aspect. Compared to the typical IKEA furniture display applications, this app that you show right now has this cognitive ability, kind of. It understands what a Sudoku is. It picks it up out of the nature. It does OCR, so basically from the photo it can read the numbers, and then it fills it in. So it kind of is going in the direction where it's smart. I mean, it's very limited, right? Mm-hmm. It's a very plain application, but it kind of is smart regards the Sudoku. It does OCR, it does detection, it plays the numbers there. So it interacts in a very smart way in this one particular application. Mm. And if you ever wanted to beat your grandma in Sudoku, well, now's your chance.
I don't know if that it's a two-player game. I think it's a pretty single.
Oh, it's not like chess?
But you're right. There's a lot of frameworks that are, you know, that's behind an app like this. A lot of tech that didn't even exist 5 years ago that needed to exist for this thing to exist, and now it does. So, shout out to you, Brad. Well done. Another thing I want to talk about is Blocker by Afternow. I think VR Scout had an article about them. I saw it on Twitter, where it's actually a pre-visualization tool for like movie making, where you can go out to your outside or in your room. You can put models of people. They just look really polygonated, you know, actors. Put them exactly how you want to block them in the scene, and then go around and actually like take pictures and I think videos of like the shots that you want to create. And it just really helps you pre-visualize shooting a movie or shooting a clip before you do it.
Like a storyboard, right?
It's an actual real life outside storyboard, where you're, rather than trying to just draw out the storyboard, you're actually, you know, you're in the scene, composing really the impressive shots. Yeah. I thought it was really neat. I haven't used it yet, 'cause like, I don't really make story based videos, unfortunately. No,
beautiful.
I don't know. I like to do a lot more run and gun type of material, but Yeah, I thought it was really neat. And I think just a few weeks ago, we were just having this conversation and we're trying to predict what ARKit will be used for. And this and is just the first
thing. That's unique. Yeah.
Oh, and this is, as of this morning, Sketchfab has released a new update for their app. They now fully support AR for every single one of their models. Yeah, pretty neat.
Whoa.
So I went in and downloaded my my photogrammetry models that we've talked about here, and you know, just kind of visualize them around my room. It doesn't work as like high frame rate as I want it to, because I think my models are also like really huge, like they're upwards of 1 million polys, but it's still really neat. I think like once I figure out how to optimize things better for Sketchfab, like I don't want to build my own app just so I can go out, like just so I can look at my own photogrammetry models in AR, you know, like it's I'm glad that there's a service that I can just upload to and then I can just use that.
It's the ecosystem. Yeah. You just have convenience and you can just enjoy it.
That's right. We're just starting to reduce the barriers between like idea and actually execution, where you don't have to build everything anymore. It's like, okay, there we go. So,
and even building augmented reality applications is really easy. So I was participating in this awesome hackathon. Big shout out to Next Reality. It's association in Hamburg City in Germany, which kind of tries to push, as far as I understood, basically the technology of mixed reality, augmented reality, VR to the people. So they're kind of supported by the city itself. And they had a hackathon and we were three people building a application with ARKit for navigation.
Okay. Tell us what you built.
Exactly. It was a way to display navigation cues, so basically a line, how to walk, inbuilt in the building and outside of the building. And when you would do it in the building.
The building being the airport?
The building was the building we were in, but it was kind of the virtual airport. So you would basically help people to navigate through and to the airport. And outside of this university building we have been to, that was the virtual airport, it would turn on the GPS and use it additionally to ARKit. Hmm. And inside it would just rely on ARKit, and then it would basically recenter itself when it got additional GPS information. And when you would go in again, the map would disappear and you would just have the ARKit landmarks showing you how to walk through this building. Then you would have certain things you needed to reach, so it would show you a ticket. And you would basically reach the virtual counter, right? Because you need to show it. So it was just basically a very neat small demo of the ARKit technology. And it was basically 1.5 guys programming it in 1.5 days. So it's very impressive.
Cool.
To be honest.
That's really neat.
I mean, I didn't have any Swift experience. Yes. So Maximilian definitely had a little bit of Objective-C experience, but not so much Swift. And we coded it together, and he was mainly programming it. I was conceptualizing it and testing it, and it went so smooth. 1.5 days, people who never used ARKit before, and we won the second prize, and it was still kind of impressive. So I was like, not only impressed by the stability of ARKit, and I tried to compile ARCore on my S8, which didn't run and crashed, which I don't know why, but ARKit is.
Yeah, Apple makes it a pretty simple and easy framework to use, especially with like Unity integration. It's pretty plug and play. You know, you just need to get. I think you need a Mac still to develop for it.
Yes.
Right, you need Xcode. And you need Xcode 9, but everything's.
However, one small point is that I actually initially wanted to develop on the HoloLens, and I figured out I cannot because I had a Mac with me. So, you know, the HoloLens only can be developed with Windows. Xcode can only be used on Mac.
That's right.
We all know there's wars between the platforms, right?
Everyone's still exclusive on their own things, but...
I don't like
it. Actually, VR is the only... I'd say Steam VR, or just kind of general VR development, is now the only one that's cross-compatible, right? You can develop on a Mac.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, basically. I still haven't seen anyone using an external GPU with their MacBook, but... in theory, it can be done.
I really would like to do it because my Mac doesn't have a proper GPU at all. And I don't think I can that easy extend it, but I'm kind of excited about the possibility to just, you know, be on the go with a portable MacBook Pro. Just go home, plug it in into the external GPU and be able to do whatever I want, like to do. However, I'm kind of skeptical if it will work perfectly. So I still have to try it myself.
One more thing I actually want to throw in here was the news that Intel put out that they're scrapping their Project Alloy reference design headset. I laughed a little bit because I was thinking about the terms that they invented as well, called merged reality, and they probably won't get rid of that anytime soon because, you know, everybody likes their own terms. But yeah, this was Intel's 6DoF inside out tracking all-in-one headset that they showed off basically this time last year, and I tried it, and honestly, like, I wasn't that impressed by it a while back. They did have some really interesting ideas that they were exploring in there, including hand tracking, including the reason why they called it a merged reality is because they wanted to include parts of your room and, like, your table and your chair and the things, you know, the obstacles that would be in your way to be integrated into your room. Plus, they I think they wanted to do it as a multiplayer experience as well. However, I think with the oncoming Oculus Santa Cruz headset, which we haven't heard anything about, hopefully we'll see more in a week or two at Oculus Connect 4.
I think they will announce new hardware.
I'm sure they'll show way more about this all-in-one headset because they announced it at OC3 last year. They're going to have to show, or at least, like, give us the full details, you know, this year.
I mean, maybe Oculus and it's not as big as Apple, but there were so many leaks about the new iPhone, and I didn't saw any leaks about a new Oculus headset or anything. So
that's kind of scary. I mean, we haven't heard any leaks from Oculus before. Like, that's typically not. They're pretty locked down. It's not like it's not an Apple-wide. The reason why there's so many leaks about Apple is because the scale that they work in terms of, like, the phones that they have to build, the amount of testing and iterations that they have to go through China. Plus, they've been doing this for 10 years, and, you know, there's going to be so much, there's a lot of incentive for people to want to leak this out. And marketing actually, I'm sure, has integrated and designs around, you know, the leaks themselves and hype up that way. But Oculus, I mean, like, in a grand scheme of things, nobody really cares about, like, smaller things like that. It's not going to get hype from the general mass public about leaks coming out from there. But going back to Intel here, I don't think they scrapped this because of Oculus's.
No.
I think it's more in terms of Qualcomm's reference. You know, so Qualcomm also has a inside out headset reference design using the 835 processor, which
Snapdragon,
so that processor is now integrated into, like, almost every flagship smartphone on the Android side, including, let's see, Sony uses it, LG,
Samsung,
who are we missing here?
Pixel.
Yeah, that's right. HTC, the Pixels. I'm probably a few of the Chinese companies as well. Intel's probably thinking, like, we'll let, you know, Qualcomm take care of that end, and I think they're going to concentrate more on, like, their wireless video transmission systems. They were talking about Intel Optane. Anyway, so Intel seems to not want to go into wanting to supply, well, they were never going to build the headsets themselves, but at least, like, even supply.
Let's see, I mean, isn't Qualcomm a competitor to them?
Yeah, total competitors.
So if you just said that they will just let Qualcomm do it and don't do it themselves, there is basically one reason, because they don't believe this is a profitable business.
Well, yeah, because nobody's using Intel chips in their phones, right? Like, everything's Qualcomm based, as far as I know.
Intel chips have been used just a few times, so mostly it's just Tegra or Kirin. Kirin is from Huawei, and you have this non-pronounceable chip from Samsung, but half of the smartphones, they can't pronounce it properly. It's Anxuse, something like that. They have half of the S8s is actually their own processor and half
is
Snapdragon.
That's right.
But mostly every flagship phone has indeed a Snapdragon processor or at least ARM-based. So I'm just not sure why Intel is just leaving this market, not trying to invade it.
I don't know. We might need more information or better analysis.
If anyone from our audience wants to leak some secret documents, I have a Gmail address. So you could just email me.
You don't need to leak anything. If you have thoughts or ideas as to why Intel is actually, you know, ditching these efforts, we'd love to know your ideas. Actually, tweet at us at ResearchVRcast. We'll have this episode posted there, and you can probably just comment onto it. Or if you don't like Twitter and you have a Facebook account, we'll have this also on our Facebook page at ResearchVR Podcast. You should find us there.
Wonderful.
And
next topic,
I think we want to talk a little bit about your paper.
And then about you.
And then we'll talk about the Oculus Connect 4.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll talk about me.
Perfect. Okay, to sum it up, I'm not sure if I'm legally allowed to speak about it, but I will just do it. I submitted a paper at a conference called VRST 2017.
Okay.
It's a Zgraph-sponsored conference. And the paper got accepted, and now I'm just in the process of finally making sure that the LaTeX template is working. So the paper is about the influence of cognitive stress on PAS integration, and basically what we did.
What does that mean? Cognitive stress on what?
PAS integration, which is the ability to integrate the path you have been walking previously and know where you are.
Path integration for audience, because I keep hearing PAS integration, and I don't know what that means. Oh, so I just want to help encode your brain here, because it's full of information.
You're very passionate and also very patient with me.
We're just helping each other. It's all good.
Yes.
You're interested in looking at how cognitive stress is affecting your ability to find home or find where you came from. Okay.
Yeah. So imagine, and this is a task we had, you walk in a triangle. So you basically start to walk in front of you towards the landmark. Then you go left or right. And then you have to say where you came from. It's a triangle completion task.
Hmm.
And during that primitive task, which was the baseline, there were spheres. It was all happening with the DK2. So Oculus DK2, you were sitting in a chair, rotating, running with a controller, and the spheres was flying towards you. And there was a time window that you had to react, and was a difficult condition and an easy condition. And the difficult one, you had less time. And when the sphere exploded, you became slower. You got stunned for a few seconds, and your moving speed decreased. You got a bright flash of light in your eyes. The controller vibrated, and you lost money. So, or at least some part of the payment. So it was kind of not very desirable that the sphere is exploding and you wanted to defeat it while you still maintain the task of walking in this landmark. So there were no landmarks except for the triangle completion task itself. So this was a star field grass environment. So basically above you were stars and below you were beautiful grass from Unity.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was measure your skin conductance and your heart rate with a very reliable sensor that you can hack yourself from Cooking Hacks. You can actually just mount it on an Arduino or Raspberry, and it measures all those information. It has like over 9 sensors. We just use the skin conductance and heart rate. Mm-hmm. We did the heart rate variability and the skin conductance analysis. We had a short state stress questionnaire, SSSQ, and also a few other questionnaires that you can later on read in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And what we ended up with is...
Wait, before you get there, but what was your hypothesis going into this?
Exactly.
What did you predict? Yeah,
maybe it's worth telling it. The hypothesis was that the ability to navigate should be better under a certain stress influence, but with too much stress, it should drop. So baseline versus easy should, at least we had this idea that during the easy condition where you had a little bit of stress, you would just navigate better than in the baseline, and when you had too much stress, you would navigate worse.
Hmm. Why did you predict that? Like, just walking, you know, baseline would be lower than having some kind of arousal or some kind of stress to help you find your path back.
There were many factors. One of them were the subjective interviews with subjects from previous studies with a few space navigation belt.
Okay.
I've talked a few times in the podcast about what's just basically this belt that navigate with north.
Vibrating
a lot of
belt
studies.
For blind people,
exactly.
Basically? Yeah.
Exactly. But before it became for blind people, it was used to kind of augment or substitute your sense, your senses by showing you the north direction all the time you walk. And in the subjective questionnaires, or in the subjective interviews, Subjects were reporting that during stress, when they had to run for a bus or they were, you know, kind of aroused, they would use information from the belt more. And there were also a few other studies that we quoted in the paper that showed that when you basically have to do a task like navigation and your cognitive abilities are not completely taken away by the surrounding or by the stress itself, it kind of pushes you more to be awake, aware. So even though it's very boring to walk all the time in a triangle, and when there is some gamification factor, you're supposed to be more aware, right? That kind of made sense, but that's a problem. As far as we understand the data and the experiment, we did not induce enough stress to make sure that there was strong influence on the navigation itself. However, we showed that the ecological validity, that's what we were arguing for, and with ecological validity, I mean that instead of, for example, taking the environment in the lab, take the lab into the environment, and that way, instead of taking the lab to the environment, you take the environment into the lab, and instead of just having a screen with one dot projected there and your EEG data spiking, you have a more complex situation like driving a car in traffic that resembles more the real world.
I want to revisit the idea of ecological validity. I think we've talked about this way early on in the show.
Yes.
Do you want to explain a little bit of what that means for the new listeners?
The idea is that how much your scientific research data or your scientific discoveries are generalizable regards the whole world. So let's say if there is a red dot all the time popping up on the screen and sometimes a blue one or vice versa, then you would have the P300 spike in your EEG data. Now, if we go to the traffic, will you have the same spike if all the time there is green light on the traffic light, but sometimes there is like a red one or the yellow one? So how much do we understand about, or how much can we learn from the data we generated scientifically compared to, or how much can we generalize the knowledge we gained to the real world? So how?
Because you're controlling so many variables in an experiment. Exactly. Sometimes it's not valid to like extrapolate that conclusion to the real world. Okay.
Yeah, and that way we argue that with VR, it's way easier to just basically have reproducible complex environments. And usually you don't do a complex experiment setup because it's just complex and you never get good data. So you're not lazy, you just strive for the best data, and that way you make the experiment as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. But with VR, as we argue and many others, it's way easier to reproduce and have the same over and over experimental setup again in any part of the world that is pretty complex because you can control every aspect of your virtual environment. And what we argue in the paper for is that we showed that you can induce cognitive stress or at least arousal that is very close to cognitive stress with virtual reality. And you can modulate it because between the baseline and the hard tasks and the easy tasks, there was a difference. However, we could not basically test if there was a proper influence of the stress on the navigation. So the novel part of the stress induction method worked out, but we would need to refine it or improve it, or anyone else who wants to repeat the study to actually answer the second question.
Cool. So you realize that basically VR is really good at inducing stress, or at least like finding ways of modulating stress even
better. I would say differently. VR, it's very good to use VR to induce stress. Like it's not the VR that induces stress, but it's rather very good to use VR as a method to very softly and without damaging the subject, without putting his hand in cold water, induce the type of stress that we wanted to have, the cognitive stress.
And it's replicable. Replicable with like minimal differences between participants. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really neat. VR, I think that's how I got introduced to it as well, as a tool for research rather than like, you know, as a tool for games or tools for whatnot too. Is like, oh, this is something, rather than trying to spend thousands of dollars building this testing environment, you know, in real life, you could actually build it in Unity and prototype way faster. And it's really neat for that reason. And I think VR is going to be start to be used in a lot of different labs for reasons that, you know, probably aren't the most classical reasons why you'd want to have a VR headset in a lab.
And it is already developed. I will actually link a few papers that I quoted in this VRST submission that show particularly more examples of the cases where people use stress and VR, anxiety in VR. One is from the Max Planck Institute in Leipzig, which I actually visited myself, and it was a pretty complex setup because they used like pre-Vive technology, but they also managed to modulate stress very nicely. And the other study was actually done by a guest we might potentially have at some point, because we asked him. He's a professor from Hamburg. And they basically checked how much redirected walking induces stress and how much redirected walking. Read the paper to be more precise. I read it and I read many other papers because I had like the submission deadline. My brain is cooked. But I think they checked how much redirected walking influences your ability to do something or how much stress it influences. And they figured out that if your room is big enough and you don't do strong enough redirected walking, it's kind of fine. But it's a certain threshold. It's kind of bad for performance, whatever. Super exciting.
I'll say this. I think people should really stop pursuing redirected walking for consumer-based, like home-based things. I think it's like so limited and how what you can actually do. And the only places that I've actually seen it do well is like places like The Void, I think, where you have a big enough space, it's installation-based VR, and like you have a specific app or thing that they're walking through, and you know, redirected walking works for that specifically because they've designed everything for that. But like, it's really hard to make something like that work for like many different apps in one room and different room configurations. Anyway, this is just that just talking about a subject that we've covered like way in the past, and I think our opinions have changed since like we started this podcast. Was it early 2016? Must have been, right? A little bit before the Rift and Vives were up. I think we all had different ideas as to like which research will start to make a bigger impact into the industry and how and what people can learn from. And I think I've changed my tune in terms of like even locomotion, in terms of redirect walking. And now I'm a big advocate for like more abstract movement rather than like trying to replicate real life things. And going back to like gamer movement almost. Like, anyway, that was just a side note that I want to throw out there. Well done, Peter. I think, you know, you're using VR in a really new and novel way, and I'm glad that your lab is starting to pioneer.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm really glad that I have this wonderful professor, Peter König, who I hope I will also get once on this podcast, that managed, you know, to get the grant and was supporting it. And were like more than me working on it, like over 10 people in the beginning. And the paper part was done by 4 people, including my professor. So, you know, thanks everyone. And another part of my life, hopefully soon.
For our listeners, if you yourself are in a university or school, or just kind of like tinkering and trying to learn things about human beings, about brains, or just about VR itself, let us know what you're working on. I think we'd love to like hear about it. We'd love to talk about it, and maybe even bring you on to the show to discuss some of that. So I know a lot of our audience are, you know, like developers and tinkerers. So let us know. I think this is really interesting. You could, like I said, tweet at us at Twitter at ResearchVRcast, but sometimes 140 characters is a little too short, which a lot of times
then
it
is. Facebook,
or you could also email us at researchvrcast@gmail.com. All these links will be in the show notes.
And if you ever come to our episodes, I promise not to ask mean questions.
I'll keep Peter on a leash so that he won't be the mean guy that he usually is.
Oculus Connect.
Oculus Connect, baby. OC4 is coming around. Let me find it. I believe it is October
15th.
I thought it was 11. Let me check. Oculus Connect. Oculus October 11th to 12th at the San Jose Convention Center. So I'll be there. That's really exciting. Yay. I'll be there with Sarah Liesel Vogel from VRBase, and she also the lead developer behind Lucid Trips, also an awesome app. Maybe I should do a podcast with her actually talking a little bit about their locomotion system, which is really neat.
Definitely.
So I'll be there, and this time, rather being there as like press or media, I actually really want to go to the talks and sit down and just like learn, because I miss a lot of those for the previous conventions that I've been there. And I kind of want to do a little coffee get together meetup. Peter, unfortunately, I don't think you're going to make it to this conference, are you?
Nope. This time I can't.
Fortunately, you won't be. I'll be there. So our audience, I want to get a like kind of a ballpark idea as to like who else is going to be there. I keep throwing our Twitter handle out, but yes, please tweet at us when you hear this, that if you're going to be at the show. We'd love to meet up with you. We'd love to talk. We'd love to get some ideas and some real FaceTime. Being in a podcast sometimes is like yelling into an echo chamber, because like there isn't the real-time feedback. And this episode, we're not live streaming either, so we're not getting that instant feedback either. So yeah, let us know in terms of that. Hopefully I can organize like I can schedule a real event, a real, I say, quote unquote, and we can do something really fun. So
that'll be use a chance, get his hand shake, get an autogram on your chest, buy him a beer, brush his hair, do all the weird things he always wanted to do.
You know what? Beers, that might be the event. It might be like after Oculus Connect, like maybe you would get some beers and some food, yeah. You know, that'll be nice. Yeah. And other activities. Yep. So whatever deems appropriate for the time being.
And you can also ask us about what he's been doing lately. And he
yeah.
can describe it now, and you can ask more questions in person.
I've
before.
So I guess I can talk about, I was going to talk about some future episodes. We'll come back to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Somehow housekeeping now. Housekeeping. Now I'm cleaning the house. Okay.
Oh my god, he's shoveling virtual.
That should be a sound bite, just like housekeeping. And that's like,
yeah.
Knock, 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 knock. So I've been, yeah, I've for the past month or two, I've started my own production company. And when I say production, I mean in terms of like, I call it a creative production agency. And that means like, it's a little bit broader scope than just a normal video production, you know, company that does weddings or whatever. Like I mostly specialize in helping VR companies make trailers, mixed reality trailers, a lot of videos, marketing collateral. I've been working with camera companies, with experimental cameras, like Yi is one of them, out of China, a little bit with 360 there as well. Some aerial cinematography, and I think we've talked a lot about that before. So basically, yeah, a lot of the projects that like most other one-man teams wouldn't take on, I do, because I have a pretty niche amount of skill set. So it's been really cool. I mean, it's nice working for myself and on kind of my own time accord, and I can work whenever and more importantly, wherever I want to. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That makes a huge difference. Yeah.
I was in Denmark about a week ago at the CopenX conference, kind of talking about the inherent problems of marketing VR and how and kind of analyze the factors of like virality, the factors of like what makes a certain video or a gameplay clip go viral, and how you can kind of like figure out those factors, try to incorporate them into your experience and lay the factors, you know, seed the factors into your app so that there's more user generated content that at the end market.
Talk recorded?
It was recorded. Yeah, it was a pretty professional setup. I haven't seen the video yet. I don't think it's posted anywhere yet. Hopefully it will be soon.
Yeah, we'll link to it.
So that was really neat. Thank you for CopenX for inviting me out there. Copenhagen is just probably one of my most favorite cities in the world, I'll say. That and Berlin, I think, have been one of my two favorite, I think, recently that I've been to, and in terms of like the companies that I've met and the people. And I think I'll be there again soon. So maybe we'll do a meetup in Germany next time.
In Berlin. Berlin
would be incredible. I mean, half of our audience, or not half, the top
one third,
but at least the top two audiences from our podcast are one from the US, the other is from Germany, and then I think the next is like Britain and Canada and Australia. Yep. So Yeah, hello to all our German friends. We should do a fun meetup and
get full of German accent.
For listeners out there, I mean, if you guys need help on getting videos, marketing collateral, I specialize a lot as well on like optimizing social media content, because like I post a lot of things and I know what work. If you need help on that end, let me know, because what I've noticed even with like big companies with huge multi-million-dollar marketing budgets, they don't know what the hell they're doing, dude. Like they have no idea how they should approach VR, who their actual market is, what the market is looking for, what makes them cringe. Like there's a lot of that a lot of people don't know. So I try and a little bit of alleviating that pain. So you can reach out to me at AzadUX on Twitter, or you can see my work on Instagram at AzadUX. I post all the pretty stuff on Instagram and all the tech and VR stuff on Twitter. They're like totally different sides of my personality. I think if you look at my Twitter feed and my Instagram feed, it's like one is like a travel photographer, videographer person, and the other guy's like sitting in a basement, you know, working on VR, reading VR patents and
doing really tech
things. I mean, yeah, you know, they're just, this is me. I like to do many different things. And I think each platform has its own appeal, and you can't, like, if I swap the two subjects that I concentrate on in Instagram and Twitter, like they wouldn't work on the other platform. So, I look forward to hearing from you guys. Let me know if I can be of any help. I've been helping HTC make some trailers recently, and it'll be really fun. Lots of good stuff.
Yeah, book Azad now.
book
with the promo code of ResearchVR. You will get a 5% discount.
5% discount. I like that. And maybe a shout out on the podcast when the trailer is out. Recently, actually, there's the trailer for Osso VR came out, which is a medical VR medical VR app training. It's a really interesting app, actually, that I had a pleasure of shooting a mixed reality trailer with a Rift, actually, using the Oculus tools. I haven't seen any other Rift MR headsets or MR trailers out there yet, so... earlier ones I'm happy about. So you can also find that on my Twitter. I posted that.
Nice.
Cool. I think that's enough of housekeeping from my end. Is there anything else I want to talk about? I'm flying a 360 camera on a drone today. That's going to be really fun. Ooh. Yeah. I have a Typhoon H, which is this hexacopter drone that I found a guide to building this Gear VR version. And I got that working, and now I have the Yi 360 camera that's not even released yet, and I want to see if it looks good. It shoots pretty nice quality video. We'll see how that one turns out.
I expect the footage to be on your Twitter.
Yeah, hopefully. I think it will be. I've been really impressed by it. Speaking of 360 cameras, the Insta 360 One, I think, is really neat. Because I think they've gone past VR in terms of like, just appealing to VR, you know, use a 360 camera to make VR. It's no. They're like, let's use 360 cameras as like a way of like capturing way more. And, you know, the Little Planet view, I think, is really interesting. They have something that they call bullet time mode, where you put the Insta 360 on a selfie stick, and then you spin it around yourself. Like literally, like you grab it and then you spin it around the whole selfie stick, but it records this super cool like matrix looking shot that it's almost like a mini drone that flies around you, and it's in slow-mo like bullet time, and it's just like you can imagine what that looks like. Just think that's of that
impressive.
I thought like, you know, using these 360 cameras to achieve things outside of VR, I think it's kind of give them life that they need, because it's not growing that well as far as I
can. Nope.
So shout out to them. I think they're starting to pick up the pace on like how the general mass public is starting to look at 360 cameras as just a kind of a new and novel thing that you can experiment with, rather than, you know, simulate empathy and just for VR and worry about motion sickness and all the problems that we know about. So, yeah, really neat things there. Before we end it, I wanted, I've been talking with, SciArc, which is a nonprofit actually that they specialize in capturing historical, like World Heritage sites and preserving them and 3D by 3D scanning them, either with photogrammetry or LiDAR or other methods as well. So their mission like really resonated with me because like what I was doing this summer in Armenia. Hopefully I'll have one of their directors on to talk. And we're going to talk a lot about, you know, probably a lot more about photogrammetry and how important it is to capture these sites. Yeah. So that's going to be really neat. We haven't set a date yet, but I'm excited about that episode.
No, but we have a lot of exciting guests coming. So hopefully the professor from Hamburg, hopefully my professor, hopefully the guy you just mentioned. Mm-hmm.
We've got a few other game.
Oh, we want to have the Gnosis guy to be also on our podcast once.
That's right. We'll talk about that as well when we have.
Yeah, Rob will also hopefully be here. He has a very unique approach to VR that I would like to discuss too.
Yeah.
Awesome things.
And we'll fill in on the details more as we get them. Hopefully with the bigger episodes, we'll announce if we're going to be doing a live stream so you guys can listen to it ahead of time or, you know, you can schedule it ahead of time. Basically, that's where we are. We kind of stopped streaming a week or two ago just because it was getting a little bit hectic when I had to like host and produce the live stream where like it was like trying to make sure the stream was running and like keeping up with all of that was just detracting, you know, cognitive resources from me from hosting the show and actually like following up with interesting questions and even listening sometimes. So I think sticking to the podcast format is probably going to work best for us for now.
And that's what you will definitely rely on. We will have the audio out. And then from time to time, when we have really exciting guests, we still can do the live show.
That's right.
However, it's not only the cognitive demanding part that Azad cannot really focus on the interview anymore. It's also that, yes, you just figured out he's a very busy man. And I am sometimes also, and I'm not lazy busy. And that means we are everywhere in the world. And VR and stable internet connections are something that are not necessarily something that is growing on trees. So
that's right.
Sometimes getting a stable connection is tough, sometimes getting a proper headset is tough, sometimes combination of those issues and that just adds too many problems that distract from having a nice conversation, right?
Right.
In addition to the fact that you need to manage it. So, you know,
yeah,
that's how it is.
That is how it is. Hopefully from OC4, maybe I can do like a mobile live stream. Maybe
nice.
With some of our audience as well. That would be really neat and just kind of like document our faces. We're still using Big Screen to meet up and actually do the podcast. I think it's really neat. It seems to be working really well with like the gestures and the cues that you can get.
Yes. And we might record it. Next time.
That's right. All right, guys. Thank you everybody for listening. If you have comments, suggestions, or complaints, hopefully no complaints, let us know on Twitter at ResearchVRcast, on Facebook at ResearchVRpodcast, or you can email us at researchvrcast@gmail.com. If you have suggestions, if you have things that you're working on or even research that you want to talk about, definitely use those channels to let us know. I want to thank Mr. Peter Lekoff for being here again.
I want to thank you for moderating and making it possible.
Thank you. I want to thank my father, Nerses Balabanian, for making the intro, actually. And I want to thank the rest of the world for being cool people and helping the advancements of the human race. All right, guys. Thank you, and goodbye.
Hug each other, love each other.
That's how we should do it.